Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com presentation.
With the Hollywood sexual assault scandal making new headlines practically every day, or seems like every day, a good friend of mine, he was in town last week. We went out for a drink to catch up, and we got to talking about this. And he said something that kind of stuck with me. He said this. He said, "I feel like 90% of men have no idea where the line is between appropriate and inappropriate." And I've been wanting to drive on this topic for a few weeks now, so I figured that comment he made was as good of a jumping off point as any for conversations out in the Lyft car.
I think 90% of the men know where the line is, but also cross the line thinking that what they're doing is not a big deal.
This is a 47-year-old. He lives in a wealthy suburb, and he works in the corporate event space. And right here, we are driving from the Gold Coast to Union Station during Tuesday afternoon rush hour.
But I think they know that there's a line, and they do it. Here's a simple explanation. I work in a business where we have business colleagues that are both male and female. Very often, the co-workers in my business will hug the female colleague, shake the hand of the male colleague. Is that crossing the line? Some would say it is. It depends on the person. Again, it's very natural for these people to do the hugging, but I, where it's not as natural, would say, I think that might be a line. That you wouldn't hug the male colleague, so why are you hugging the female colleague? When you're saying goodbye at the end of a dinner or what have you.
That's a really good point because there's so many subtleties that are going on there. I think, my initial reaction to that question you asked is if the hug is unwanted. But how do you know?
You're right. Is the hug unwanted? But I would say, let's say it's not wanted or unwanted. It's surprised, and it's not a lingering hug. It's just a regular sort of a hug goodbye. Oh, great to see you. A hug goodbye. But if you wouldn't do that to a male colleague, is it crossing the line because it's a female colleague? Do we know that there's a line? I think most reasonable men know there are lines. But I think the crossing of what we all agree is sort of the formal red line of crossing leaves a lot of interpretation.
Right. And so you're basically saying most men know exactly where that line
yes.
is. But they deliberately decide to cross it because they convince themselves that it's not a big deal.
Yeah, I don't know that I would say that most men decide to cross it. They may not think about it, but in the abstract, like if they were being asked the question, they might, like if we were sitting here and saying, what do you think about a hug in a business situation? They would probably say it's probably not appropriate. But in a casual business situation, you know what I'm saying? This is a little bit longer answer, but you're not in an office, but let's say you're out to dinner or out for drinks, saying goodbye at an airport, whatever the case may be, it's more casual than business, but these are business colleagues. Is it appropriate to hug? And I think that's where, beyond that, yes, we all know the things that we're reading about in the paper, we know our lines to it that were crossed. I mean, there's no question about that. I mean, the amazing thing is when you talk to all of my female family members and every single one of them will tell you a story of when the line was crossed with them.
I couldn't actually talk to any of his female family members, but fortunately, this week, The Lyft app paired me with a number of female passengers who each had stories about that line being crossed.
You know, I can't do my job because someone is harassing me.
Is he married?
Yep.
Kids?
Yep. Management? Yep.
He sat down and he slid his hand right up under my seat.
We are in the middle of a movement, and good things come out of movements.
This is Backseat Rider, the podcast where I drive a Lyft car in Chicago, and whoever ends up in the backseat becomes the cast of this show. And this week, to start off, a wide range of responses to my friend's 90% comment.
What percentage of guys do you think know where the line ends?
5%.
What percentage of men, I suppose in the workplace or otherwise, do you feel like know where the line is between appropriate and inappropriate behavior?
You're talking just your average Joe Blow guy?
Yeah.
...60%.
Okay.
That's a hard question. I don't know what percent, but I would say, like, a good amount don't.
That last answer is from a preschool teacher. And despite her opinion that good amount of men don't know where the line is, she says she doesn't see it at her school because her fellow teachers are all women.
Not at the workplace, but... like, I've heard stories from other friends who don't work with all women.
Is there one you could that comes to mind that you can share?
I can't really think of one right now.
Okay, no problem.
Sorry.
No problem at all.
I got a similar answer from another woman I drove. She is an employee at a local hospital who also works in a female-dominated department.
I have never felt that in the workplace, ever. And... so, fortunately, I don't have direct experience with, you know, misogyny in the workplace or sexual assault. And so, when I hear these stories, it's like I can't wrap my head around it because I don't even understand how it could come out. I can't even fathom in what world that would happen.
Two women who haven't been exposed, but here's an important detail apart from the lopsided gender breakdown at each of their offices. They are both in their early to mid-20s, and the more that I got paired with women who have been in the workplace for longer, the more I started hearing about inappropriate behavior.
No, I think it's pretty common, at least in my business because it's dominated by males.
This is an ad executive, and she specializes in outdoor advertising. She's 54 years old, and she's been in her industry for more than 20 years.
What have you experienced personally or witnessed personally in your time?
Years and years ago, I think one of the managers was in town who said something to me very inappropriate, I'm sorry. And I was able to just basically tell him to shut up, and it ended.
Do you mind telling me what he said to you?
Yeah, he said something like, I understand you have a really good relationship with such and such at an ad agency, who I work with all the time, who's a man, and so did this guy. And he's like, I can't understand why, because you don't have big tits. Yeah.
And your response was?
Why don't you shut the F up? And that was the end of it.
Based on that experience, what advice would you have for women who are just now entering the workforce?
Go to their supervisor immediately. Go to their supervisor immediately. And if nothing's done, take it up the food chain. Yeah.
Okay.
And actually, now that I think of it, a client said something about a gal that worked for me, something about her breast size or I don't know, something. And I called him on the phone, and I'm like, hey, I don't know if this was said in jest, whatever, but don't do it again. It's not cool. And I think he was pretty kind of embarrassed by it. And then I told the lady, I said, by the way, I called him. And, whoa, what? I said, because it's not, that's not cool. It's not funny. It's just not right. And it seemed to be fine after that.
Now, did you, quick question on that. Did she give you the green light to do that? Was she taken aback? Because I think a lot of it is this, like, weird, not code of silence, but this fear on people in her particular situation that if you do speak up, then your career, you're putting your career at risk.
I said, I think I'm going to call him. And she's like, well, she was nervous. What are you going to say? I said, listen, I've known him for 20 years. I'm just going to say, you brought this to my attention. I wasn't there. I don't know the situation. I'm hoping this was said in some kind of jest, but whatever, it was inappropriate. And please don't do it again.
Was that the end of it?
Uh-huh.
More recently, she says she has seen a change in her office environment in the weeks since Harvey Weinstein, Kevin Spacey, and all the other famous names started to emerge.
It's obviously concerning, but I also think in a way it's good because companies, including mine, are basically have a zero tolerance policy. Someone's recently gotten fired. I don't know all the details, nor will I, but I think it's good that it's coming out because I think more people are going to be paying attention to it, taking it seriously.
So somebody at your own company just recently got fired for this?
Got fired something to do with inappropriate behavior. That's all I was told.
Okay.
So, and it had something to do with texting inappropriate photos.
Oh, it did. Okay.
Yeah.
Now,
sexual in nature by inappropriate.
Hmm. Did it surprise you? Like with this?
Totally.
Did?
Totally.
So this particular man, did you ever, he never exhibited any questionable behavior from your point of view?
Never. Never.
Is he married?
Yep.
Kids?
Yep. Management? Yep.
And I think guys kind of flirt around that boundary and see how receptive women are, and then they'll push that boundary depending on your response.
Here's a 40-year-old who works in construction. I drove her from downtown to her home in a nearby suburb, and she didn't tell me her exact position, but her company handles big commercial and city contracts, and so she spends a lot of time at construction sites.
I'm picturing the stereotypical, you know, 8 workers on a sidewalk with their lunch pails hooting and hollering at female passersby. How true is that stereotype?
I think it depends. I really think it depends on the age. You know, I think the older ones, I think most guys will still. I think it's that younger generation coming in where they're like, whoa, I can get in trouble for this. So
the younger ones are, in your mind, better than the old ones?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, they're definitely more aware of what's going on. You know, they can get in trouble for even, you know, attempting to say anything. So, no, I think it is the older. I think it is the older men that don't know where that line is because they're used to they've been doing it this for so long, and now it's, you can't do it. It's like, how do you stop that when it was okay before and now you're telling me it's not?
She says those older workers were around way before sexual harassment was formally acknowledged or punished in the construction business, which is another industry dominated by males.
So I don't feel like the workplace enforced, you know, you didn't have classes. Now, even I take like sexual harassment classes, like what's, you know, what's inappropriate, when you should report this. And everyone in my company has to take classes. Everyone at other agencies, everyone I know currently now, they take sensitivity classes. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have that. That wasn't around before. So now I feel like it's enforced. You know, so I think think there's a huge difference between now and then.
Significant progress over the course of her career, but she says incidents still happen from time to time, including this one, recent.
I had a work networking event to go to, and, you know, some of us had to leave early because we had to go and get ready and then go to the work event. You know, one of the guys, like, asked this other coworker, like, oh, what are you wearing or what are you not wearing? You know, whatever. And I'm like, ugh, I'm just going to walk away right now. So...
comments from a male coworker that made her highly uncomfortable. And according to that sensitivity training she mentioned, her company policy calls for her to report that kind of thing.
Well, I mean, there's things that I'm not doing. Like, you're supposed to report even if you hear. And I don't do that, you know, whatever, because in my mind, if you're both comfortable speaking that way, who am I to say something? So I guess I am breaking the rule because I'm not reporting anything.
And what makes you not report it?
If they're both talking and they're comfortable with it, why, you're okay, you guys seem to be okay with it, like, who am I to say something?
But if it's making you feel uncomfortable?
Then I walk away.
Is the conversations you've overheard not egregious enough to where you would want to, like, run to the boss and report them because then you'd be outed? Or you would be to blame for outing them?
I guess, yeah. I mean, because I think some of the conversations I do hear, I mean, they're not, I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess I could have even reported the last one and I didn't. And, you know, that one was kind of, I was like, whoa.
In that particular case, she didn't report it, but still felt she made a statement to those two coworkers.
I walked away because in my mind, I'm like, okay, you obviously, me walking away makes, I think, people uncomfortable because they're like, okay, she doesn't want any part of this. And then they know how to talk. They know how to speak to me or they know what to say around me. And then,
right.
You know.
You make it clear.
Yeah.
How surprising are all these revelations out of Hollywood, if at all? Maybe you're not surprised.
I'm not surprised at all. And I'm glad it's coming out now. I know a lot of people have an opinion about why, you know, the women came out so late, you know, whatever. But no one wants to be that only person. No one wants to be that first person to blow the whistle. And then, you know, a lot of times you see it, you know, they attack the victim, you know, and I'm sure people were scared, you know, the women were scared to come out because they didn't want to get blamed. They didn't want to be, oh, it's her fault, you know, whatever. Now they have that support and people are like, okay, well, you know, these women were supported. I'm going to come out with mine. I don't want it to happen to someone else. And, you know, there's a show of support now instead of blaming the victim. So
it's like strength in numbers.
Yes.
Now, with your other female family members and female friends, can you tell me a little bit about what the conversations have been like on this topic? If you've had any since, you know, I think it all started with like Kevin Spacey, Harvey Weinstein. What your conversations with girlfriends or female family members have been like on this?
There's a show of support because, again, you know, people, we talk about how most women are, you know, they're blamed. Whether, in any case, when someone comes out with, I've been raped, you know, it's like, well, what was she wearing? You know, did she ask for it? Was she drunk? It's always placed... the blame is always placed on the victim, you know, whatever. And the fact that now things are turning around and women are getting the support, you know, hey, you know, this shouldn't have happened. You know, what you're wearing, you know, what you were doing has nothing to do with why this shouldn't have happened. Doesn't matter what you were wearing, whether you were drinking. It doesn't, you know, it's the guy that should, or whoever was the aggressor should be punished, not the victim.
Now, in talking about the root causes of that dynamic where the accuser's behavior gets scrutinized, she brought up a vivid memory of her middle school dress code, which she says placed the onus on girls not to wear anything that would be distracting to boys and men.
girls going to class and, you know, don't wear that, that's a distraction to men. And it's like, no, you should be teaching your boys, like, hey, you know, it doesn't matter what she wears. Like, what does it matter what she wears? You know, like, it's, why, again, why is the blame placed on the girl, the woman? You know, it's like, it's almost like, okay, so we're just, you know, don't distract the boys. Like, what about me? You know, like, I'm here to learn too. What does it matter what I'm wearing?
Coming up, the feature on the Lyft app called Lyft Line puts two complete strangers next to one another in my back seat. One who grew up in a rough neighborhood right near housing projects on the South Side.
I'm a single 66-year-old black woman with no kids. I have lived a very interesting life.
And the other, just 23 years old, from a well-to-do, mostly white suburb.
I'm struggling right now with what to do with all of my anger.
After a lengthy conversation about sexual harassment, strangers become old friends.
We've been through a lot in this car ride.
Okay.
Hey everybody, it's Chad Prather here, the guy that's unapologetically Southern on YouTube. Join me every Thursday for the Chad Prather Show exclusively here on Podcast One. I'm bringing armchair philosophy and observational humor to what's going on in the world. As guests, help me sort it all out. Nothing is off limits on the Chad Prather Show. Again, every Thursday, it's new episodes of the Chad Prather Show right here on Podcast One. Download and listen to new episodes exclusively on PodcastOne.com, the new Podcast One app, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
It was absolutely pouring rain during Wednesday morning rush hour this past Wednesday. And that means it's a great time to pick up ride requests. You get tons because no one really wants to walk to the train or the bus. But the bad thing about driving in those conditions, bad weather and morning rush hour isn't a good formula for people feeling social or chipper. All right. They just woke up. They haven't had their coffee yet. But this is one of my only windows to drive this week because of my schedule, so I really felt like I had to maximize. So that morning, I had given like 4 or 5 rides in a row where the passengers didn't feel like talking at all, so I was kind of bummed out. But by 10 a.m., the rain had died down, and I was kind of driving aimlessly through the Bronzeville neighborhood. That is a predominantly black neighborhood just south of downtown Chicago. So when I finally got a ride request for a pickup there, I was surprised when a young white woman stepped out of a graystone.
So, yeah, I manage all of our programming in West Humboldt Park currently, but we've got a partnership in Bronzeville.
She does community outreach for a local hospital. And that morning, she needed a ride from Bronzeville, where she had an appointment, all the way to another partner organization in West Humboldt Park. That's on the near northwest side, so it's a good 30 minutes away. And this was a Lyft Line ride, so there was a possibility that another passenger could be joining us at any moment. Now, if you follow me on social media, you might know that I've gotten in trouble for bringing up sensitive subjects during Lyft Line rides in the past. But at this point, I decided to press forward anyway, since I hadn't gotten much at all in terms of interviews that morning. Fortunately, the woman was up for it.
It helps that healthcare is predominantly women.
So much so that of dozens of people in her department at work, only 3 men. And at 23 years old, only a couple years out of college, she says she has a hard time even picturing what sexual harassment in the workplace looks like.
I can't picture like how that situation would even arise. Like what? In a meeting, how did the conversation transpire and end up to that? Like, how did they react? It just is all foreign to me because all of my meetings are respectful and civil and professional. So I guess it's very confusing for me to understand how, in what world people would feel like that's okay or that's, you know, normal.
Right, like normal behavior. Right. I wonder, is that a function of working in healthcare? I wonder if there's something cultural about the healthcare and hospitals or something where it just doesn't happen as much. But, you know, according to a lot of the stories, it's like about this power dynamic where women are scared to come forward when a man harasses them because they're scared of losing their jobs or, you know, having it affect their reputation in some way. And there's got to be some kind of power dynamics in any workplace, whether it's hardware, whether it's healthcare or not.
I think what's interesting about, like, I do think there's two things. Healthcare has, you know, its ultimate goal is patients first. It's all about caring and caring for others, and the whole mission behind healthcare is to make people better and make people healthy and safe. And so I think that at its foundation makes it a more welcoming environment.
Yes, hi. Oh, sir. Thanks.
New passenger enters the mix here. Picked her up from a big apartment building just a little further north, but we were still in Bronzeville at this point. And after confirming that I was her driver, she hopped into the seat directly behind me.
Most of the people in my department are women, and it's all about, like, making sure that we're giving back to the underserved. So, again, I think I'm positioned in a place where misogyny is just not welcome.
I think you're correct. Women tend to be nurturers.
Right, right.
You know, on different levels, and not everyone, but most women tend to be nurturers, and they want to take care of the problem, not add to it. So I started off in healthcare.
That was back in the 80s. She is 66 years old, so that makes her 43 years older than my first passenger. But their careers started in the same industry.
Do you mind if I ask you, Tony, what your experience has been in the workplace? You said you've been in nonprofit. You've been in
I worked in the education space. I started back when I was 19 working at Illinois Masonic Medical Center. And so you got the doctors, which are the gods. And I never dealt with physical sexual harassment in the workplace, but you get a lot of verbal sexual harassment. You get a lot of people staring, ogling you, as they say, and comments. But I was never cornered by anyone as an adult through teenage. What another thing that I think needs to be addressed now that they're coming out so openly with the sexual abuse that goes on in workplaces is the sexual abuse that goes on in neighborhoods. I grew up in Bronzeville, but I was a teenager back in the 60s, and it was like a gauntlet to walk wherever you had to walk, because the men, it was like constantly being picked upon, like you're walking past a construction site. And I know I was in a house full of women. I have three sisters, and it was constant. From the minute you start to develop, the men are just, and the comments are awful, and they have no compunctions of just walking up on you, trying to touch you. And I think that needs to be addressed, because I think it goes on more aggressively in low-income areas, but I think it goes on everywhere. And this is from the time you are in grammar school till you're an adult.
Wow.
So I think this whole sexual harassment that is coming out, I don't think you'll find many women that are surprised at all, or any women who haven't heard that story yet. Because we've heard it all, we've lived it all. It's good that it's coming out, because that's the only way that it will make a change. But the sexual harassment affects women in all aspects of our lives, because men get away with it. But having grown up in a bad community, the Stateway Projects were right there. I grew up in a house, but in that neighborhood. And I was a prisoner in our house because of the neighborhood. And I think it's because when you don't have any power, you do whatever you can to the people that you can have some power over. And unemployment and that kind of thing, these are men that are just hanging out on the sidewalks. These aren't men that are going to work every day. So I think that is the root of it. And I think the fact that the men that are working, the men that do have daughters, the men that do have some businesses around them, they never say anything. It's just that old, oh, boys will be boys thing, you know, and you're just supposed to let it roll off your cuff. But it, I was a very introverted, shy kid, and it gave me, I won't say neurosis, but it's like you have baggage, and it gave me baggage that I didn't need to have, because you have to deal with it at some point in your life, you know.
Did you ever speak up?
Oh, yes. I mean, my mother and my father knew, but what can they do when you go out and catch the bus and go to school? Or I'll tell you, one day, I went to Catholic school, so I always had on the dorky uniforms. I was in high school. I went to Mercy High School, which isn't around anymore, on 82nd and Prairie. And I was on the State Street bus. And a man got on the bus. He sat down, and he slid his hand right up under my seat. And I jumped up and went to the front and told the bus driver. And the bus driver said, well, you sit right there, and I'll keep an eye out for you. He didn't say anything to the man.
How old were you when that happened?
I think I was, I'm thinking of the uniform, we had different colors. So I was a junior.
And this would have been what year?
That would have been 1967.
Gosh. Jeez. Man, that's like traumatic.
It is, because, and then the other thing is, when it happens to you, you always wonder, what did you do? And it's not so much what did you do to entice him. Sometimes it's that, but it's like, what did I not do that I wasn't safe? Was it where I sat? Was it how I was sitting? No, I don't care what you want to say. Men are in charge. So that's why these things have been this way for this long, because men are in charge. And no matter how you try to spin it, it's been allowed to go on this long because men have the power, and they have had it forever. And because when you see women walk past construction sites and the men are hollering out of them, have you ever seen any men on the sidewalk say, you know, that's not cool? Ever?
No.
So they're just, their thing is, what clever thing can I think of to say? I'll tell you something that stands out in my mind. As a teenager walking around in what's now called Bronzeville, was a man said, just look at that. Looks like two cats trying to get out of a bag. And they're all staring at my breasts, because I always had large breasts. And it just, it sends us, the hairs on the back of your neck stand up. And right now I feel exactly, physically, the same way I felt back then when he said that.
Right now, at this moment.
Right this second. I can feel it on the back of my neck. I can feel my shoulders. And it will come out in my voice. Because you're so vulnerable. It's just you, and you're out there, and this man is saying this. What else could happen? You don't know. Till you're so many feet away from him, and you figure, okay, well, he didn't touch me. And if you didn't respond, I've had guys throw Coca-Cola bottles at me. Were you too good to speak? And this was every day on State Street. I grew up at Tinney's 36th Place, between State and Wabash at 36th Place. So to go to the grocery store or the fish market, you'd go over on State Street. And I did whatever I could to stay away from State Street. And as I say, these are unemployed boys and men just hanging out on the sidewalks. Just hanging out. But on Wabash, there weren't any commercial businesses. I would always try to walk up and down Wabash out of my way, because we were near State, closer to State Street. The bus was there. I would do whatever I could, go over to Michigan, catch the Michigan bus, just so I wouldn't have to walk on State Street. But there was no way to get around it. You had to go to the cleaners. You had to go to the grocery store. And I'm sure it's still that way. And no one ever said, hey,
that's
man,
cool.
She's just a little girl. Leave her alone. The guy who threw the Coke bottle at me, and how did I react to all of this? I just kept walking. You just look for, I tried to walk like a soldier, and I tried, this is crazy, to jiggle as little as I could. You know? How do you walk without jiggling as a woman? I don't know. But I tried my darndest to do that. And so I got this habit of people would say to me, gosh, you walk like a soldier. And I never said anything about why I did that.
And while the construction worker that we heard from a little earlier brought up her school dress code as one example of a root cause of this kind of reflex to take responsibility for this behavior, this passenger says for her and her sisters, that type of thinking started at home.
The 60s were a really weird time. I grew up in to an adult at a weird time because it was after the women's movement. You know, they burned their bras. We had birth control. You know, there were hippies. And it was like, okay, women are being liberated. You know, we don't have to stay at home. So you got the teenagers like me who were, people are telling us, well, you know, you can do anything. You don't have to be a wife. But you grow up in a house where all you ever learned was, in my house, people come in, they're your guests, you serve them. My father didn't need a remote. He had four daughters. He came home, he sat down, and he never moved.
Really?
And when company would come over, men never moved. The women served them. So you had that going on. I'm living this. And then I'm hearing and reading that we don't have to be subservient. You know, we're not secondhand citizens. So it was a very strange time, but I think, and then the movies, you know, there was still, I love Doris Day movies, you know. So it was all these mixed messages, you know, if you dress provocatively, then you might be asking for trouble. And as an adult, you realize that's ridiculous. Nobody dresses more provocatively than prostitutes, but they don't want to get raped. So what has dressing got to do with it? You know, even now I find myself seeing women. Now it's all these low cut. There's bosoms everywhere. I am so tired of seeing boobs everywhere you look. It drives me crazy. And I'm trying to let go of this this habit I have of thinking that you're asking for trouble if you ask like that. You're presenting yourself in such a way. If men are talking to your face, cover your breasts up. But I don't know why women think we have to take the blame. I guess it's because we're usually in charge of everything in the base. We have kids, we raise them. You have a household, you keep it clean. You have a yard, you make sure. You know, we're in charge of so many things that we take care of on the baseline that even as far as sexual harassment, we think, well, we should be in charge of that. It must have been our fault. I must have done something wrong. And even though you let it go, it's the first thought that comes to you. What did I do?
And as someone, as a member of a different generation, how do you react to what Tony just said in terms of the power dynamic at home? And then she still has that reaction when she sees, you know, low-cut dresses and everything. It seems like it's ingrained. How different has it been in your experience?
I'm having my feminism awakening in the last year because of the election. My passion for my life has been racial equity, and I didn't really care about female equity because I never felt oppressed. I never felt like I didn't have a choice. I've been lucky enough to not, at least maybe, you know, subtly, but I have not felt the effects of misogyny intensely throughout my life until this last year, until the presidential election, and just really smacked me in the face on the reality of what's going on, and I have this new awakened anger that I did not have previously, because I was like, yeah, women are, I feel great, you know, I feel empowered, you know, I think being a woman, you tend to have more emotions, and you deal with a lot more, but I never felt like, you know, it was misogyny at play. I thought it was just like, it's hard being a woman, But yeah, I think I'm struggling right now with what to do with all of my anger that I did not know that I had about female rights. So, to answer your question, which I'm forgetting.
just how different it was in your generation compared to Tony's. But yeah, I mean, there was just, I mean, the Women's March on Washington, I think that's what they...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there was a women's march.
Yeah, that was the first time that anything like that has happened in my lifetime. And three of my wife's best friends road tripped out there, you know, and they did the, you know, they did the whole thing. They were very, I mean, invigorated after the election as well, because let's not forget, I'm asking you guys about Hollywood. However, our president has been accused by 20 women.
And I apologize for messing up my facts there. President has been accused by a mere 16 women of sexual misconduct. And I should say, these are accusations that he has either denied or not responded to.
And his base doesn't care.
And his base, yeah. His base.
That's the most frightening
it,
thing.
Defends it. Yeah, that is, that to me is like the most
frightening thing.
Yeah,
his
you're going to have
does
assholes,
not care. Yes, this stuff is true. It's not like
got these
saying,
uneducated.
Yeah. Oh, no, no, no.
Some educated, I guess. But
yes, that's what makes that's it even more frightening.
But uneducated in the sense that clearly they're sheltered. Like, you may have a college degree.
Yes.
But you are uneducated in the world of, you live in a white suburb.
Right.
You went to a white college.
Yes.
You work in a white workplace. So that's miseducation right there. That's not like, okay, you may have your, on paper, you went to Harvard.
Right.
But where did you grow up culturally? What education did you get culturally? And that's uneducated. You are uneducated in the world. So
and exactly what you're saying crosses the board. And that's now they're telling us, oh, we need to have the race talk. And that's one thing. People are afraid to say these things. But minorities,
mm-hmm.
and I mean all minorities, being a minority, I have information you don't have.
Yeah, yeah.
As a minority, I know all minorities, and when I say all minorities, I mean Black, Hispanic, Korean, Asian, all of them know things about white people that white people don't recognize.
Oh, yeah.
And it's every minority that knows this. And because of that, also, the minorities have prejudices and bigotries, just like white people do, because they also may be educated, but they're in all Asian communities, all Hispanic communities. Their outreach, who they're interacting with, are like people. So those minorities that are for Trump, they're surrounded by other minorities that are like thinking. And I never thought that like thinking trumped truth. And that's the scary thing. Trump is showing us that it doesn't matter if it's true or false. I just want you to think the way I think. And if you think the way I think, then okay, it's cool.
At this point, we were almost to West Humboldt Park, which was my first passenger's destination. And I can say with 99% confidence here that of all the Lyft line rides I've ever given in my year and a half as a Lyft driver, these two, 23-year-old white woman from a nice suburb, and a 66-year-old Black woman from Bronzeville connected more than any other two strangers I've driven.
Well, I think engaging in this conversation is, like, so important. It's hard to break the awkwardness and the tension and the preconceived notions of what someone thinks just by looking at them. And then, you know, we're a random group of people, and yet we all are very similar.
Right.
So I think that's really special what you're doing.
Thank you very much. Would you guys be willing, before you get out, to take a picture for social media?
Totally
is that cool?
Come on,
Tony.
Pictures.
We've been through a lot in this car ride.
Okay.
And if you want to take a look at that picture I took of the two of them, I posted it to all of my social media feeds, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I'm at Anthony Ponce. If you don't follow me yet, P-O-N-C-E is how I spell my last name. And I'm at Anthony Ponce TV on Twitter. And I really hope you got something out of this week's conversation. I've been wanting to touch on this for a while now. And I will say that every passenger I drove, while they're disturbed by the allegations coming out of Hollywood and now Washington. They're also glad this stuff is finally coming to light.
We are in the middle of a movement, and good things come out of movements.
Before I go, quick favor to ask, and this is completely unrelated to this week's topic, but if you happen to see my face pop up unexpectedly in your social media feeds in the next coming weeks, kind of during holiday time, can't get too specific about what I'm talking about, but if you happen to see me doing my thing in the Lyft car, in any videos you see, as a listener of Backseat Rider, I would hugely appreciate it if you would leave a comment on one of those videos and plug the podcast. Just write Backseat Rider or something so that other people can find it. Again, if you see me in any videos over the next few weeks, plug the show in the comments. I'll love you forever if you do that. Also, as I say every week, Lyft is not a sponsor of this show. It has nothing to do with what we talk about. But if you haven't signed up for Lyft yet and you want to help me out, help support the show, sign up for Lyft using my promo code, Backseat Rider, all one word. That is for new users of the Lyft app, and that code is good for $50 in free ride credit. Backseat Rider is edited by Bob Gilmartin, and also thank you so much to WTTW and WTTW.com for their support of the show. I am off next week for Thanksgiving, but I will be back with another brand new episode of Backseat Rider the first week in December. In the meantime, to get your fix, you can catch up on the last 4 months worth of episodes of Backseat Rider for absolutely free at podcastone.com, the Podcast One app, and of course, make sure you are subscribed on Apple Podcasts. All right, I'll see you guys in a couple weeks. Happy Thanksgiving. Backseat Rider.